afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cedarstrom. I'm here with my co-host today, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Thursday, August 11th, 2022. Howdy do, Dave.
Hey, that's my name. Don't wear it out. Hi there.
Hi.
Happy National Sons and Daughter Day.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Big shout out to mine. Hannah, hope you're listening, buddy. But you know what? It's also, it's National Presidential Joke Day.
Boy, that's appropriate.
How about it? Well, that began in 1984 when, during a sound check for a Saturday evening radio broadcast, President Reagan joked, my fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes. Oops. Here are a couple of others from two modern-day presidents. Barack Obama, who said there are few things in life harder to find and more important to keep than love, a birth certificate.
No, it just depends. But he could never provide one, though, could he? Anyway.
Yes, he did. And Jimmy Carter, who said years after he left the White
That's
House.
That's debatable.
My esteem in this country has gone up substantially. It's very nice now when people wave at me, they use all their fingers. Well, good for you, President Carter.
Yeah.
Now you know, Melody.
Thanks, I think. Not so sure, but those were some very big groans today. But let's go ahead and talk about gold today. We had gold down, a little pressure on gold, not bad. $1,786 on the day on the New York spot price after market, down $7. Silver was down 34 cents at 20.35. Platinum was up 11 at 965, along with palladium being up also over 1% of 25 at 2,351. A little more pressure on the dollar slightly, 105.21. Crude oil had a bigger day, up 2.26 at 94.19. And go ahead and see what the paper markets have done. Yeah, you know, the S&P 500, that closed flat. The NASDAQ dropped 0.5%, 74 points, 12,779. S&P flat, 4207. And the Dow was up 27 points at 33,336. Asian markets, Nikkei was lower, not by much, still under 1%. European markets, the DAX and the FTSE was lower, but just barely. 10-year yield was a little bit stronger, 2.89%. And natural gas was up another $6, back up over $8, 8.70, up 6% for the day. Brent is teetering on that $100 mark once again, 99.37. So I think that's pretty much it. Of course, all eyes have been everywhere, but who knows? It's starting out to be a very weird, weird August. But anyway, we're going to talk a little bit about the gas pump. It's a good thing that gasoline is dropping below $4. This is the first time since March. That's a good thing. I love it. But it's just amazing that you can hear on some of these programs saying that people hate it, that it's fallen below. Like, who's that? Nobody hates it falling below $4. I think it's great. But we're going to have to see if it can stay there and where we're heading in the future. That's what it really is all about. But a large part is, you know, when you do have high prices, that keeps people off the road, you know, so therefore you have demand. If you also have an economy that's slowing, that's going to shut down the demand too. And you've had government, some of these states have temporarily suspended their gas taxes to partially shield their residents from the rising prices. You had, you know, the barely movable anything in the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. I mean, that barely moved the oil prices down, but hey, it's still happening. You put all these things together, and yeah, it's going to have an impact on the energy costs. We know that the energy costs, you know, it has been in part a big driver of what they consider inflation in today's world. It's really a monetary policy issue. But if you want to blame high energy costs, there we go. The CPI, the latest Labor Department CPI report shows that we do have overall price pressures easing a bit. And let's see, energy prices as a whole dropped 4.5% compared with June, and the gasoline prices fell 7.7%, Dave.
And that's leading people to ask, Melody, have gas prices peaked? The analyst consensus, we shouldn't celebrate just yet. Bob Yauger, for one, he director of energy futures at Mizuho, believes the recovery could be brief due to a number of factors that could push prices higher in the coming months. I mean, for one, I mean, we got refining capacity here in our own country, which remains extremely tight. And should a hurricane or other major storm in the coming months knock one or more of the Gulf Coast refiners offline, prices at the pump would almost certainly move higher again. And the release of barrels from the Strategic Reserve will also end this fall. And they're saying that a rebound in economic activity in China, which is not a foregone conclusion, by the way, could boost demand for petroleum products there. But the biggest wild card is the price of oil, which accounts for more than half of what we pay at the pump. West Texas Intermediate crude futures, our own oil benchmark, they're now trading at where they stood in February before Russia's invasion, Putin's invasion of Ukraine. John Kilduff at, again, Capital, says, I think it's going to be fleeting, referring to these recent declines at the pump. Noted that gas futures, which are a proxy for gas prices, are now roughly 30 cents a gallon above their recent low.
Hmm.
There you go.
Yeah, I love the lower gasoline prices, you know, but, you know, I can't imagine that they're going to stay low. I'd love to see oil prices drop to 50 once again, but I think in order for them to do that, I think we're going to have to pump up the oil here, because I don't believe it's going to go back to where it was unless we start reversing some of those policies that that started the oil prices and gasoline prices to rise back in 2021. But coming on the heels of the Consumer Price Inflation Report, the Bureau of Labor Statistics today reported that wholesale prices fell in July. This is the first time in 2 years, thanks to a plunge in these energy prices. You know, and I can't even believe what I'm hearing on some of these programs where they're talking, oh, well, there's no inflation.
Yeah.
No, that's not correct. That's not exactly true. It came down, which is good, which I've been saying, you know, for how long, that we're going to see lower numbers in these when they're reduced. But yes, inflation is still there. It didn't go away. It's still there. Producer price index, it gauges the prices received for final demand products, fell 0.5% from June. This is the first month-over-month decrease since April 2020. So economists were expecting a little bit of an increase, but the overall, the annual basis, the PPI index rose 9.8%. Okay. Still the lowest rate since October 2021. But folks, inflation is still here. It's not zero. And if you strip out the food, energy, and trade services, PPI increased 0.2% in July. Let's see. What else you got there, Dave?
Oh, boy. I don't know that I have anything really to add to this. You know, the folks who are saying there's no inflation, they're incorrectly characterizing what happened, because certain levels didn't rise from last year. But for them to say, for anyone to say there's no inflation, I mean, that just defies reality. As fiat currency, the U.S. dollar, whatever, wherever you live, there's always inflation. The value of the dollar, our purchasing power, has fallen 98% over the last 150 years. So don't tell me there's no inflation. In any event, I guess, you know, people are still saying, well, what will the Fed do now that it's eased a little bit? Well, when it eases from 8.7 to 8.5,
not time to bring out the band.
Yeah, there's still two-thirds of these Fed futures traders who two-thirds of them think there's going to be another 75 basis point increase at the next meeting in September. So,
and the thing of it is, you know, so much that all these programs that are coming out, they begin to, you know, I mean, we know they're going to eliminate the student loans. Mm-hmm. We know that's a given. So, I mean, it's all inflationary. It's all inflationary. All these programs and so forth, all the stimulus, all the, you know, that is going into these. It's all inflationary. We have a fiat dollar. It's not going to go away. So it drops to 7%, 6%, 5%. Is that something to rejoice at? And that's their numbers? So when wages aren't even keeping up with that? So anyway, we saw the number of Americans that signed up for unemployment benefits. That rose last week to the highest level in 10 months. Applications for jobless aid climbed to 14,000 to 262,000, and now has risen 5 out of the last 6 weeks. This is all from the Labor Department that reported today. The four-week average for claims, which smooths out weekly ups and downs, rose by 4,500. And let's see. So far this year, hiring in the U.S. has been strong, resilient. And what else can you add to that report, Dave?
Well, the government's U6 unemployment rate, which we know includes the so-called marginally attached or discouraged workers, and those working part-time who want a full-time job. They add that to the U3 rate, the headline rate. That was the same as last month, 6.7%. And that's more than double the headline rate that most elected officials and government agencies and corporate media mislead us on each and every month. Is all I will add to that, Melody.
Here's one that's going to grate my goat. There's no inflation. There's no inflation. No, no. Well, I'll tell you what. The U.S. Post Office, they filed notice of a temporary price hike for this year's peak holiday season, so that it would help cover extra handling costs. The agency said the adjustment was approved by its Board of Governors, is now pending review by the Postal Regulatory Commission. The price increase would go into effect on October 2nd and remain in place until January 22nd. They said it's
sounds like a long holiday season. Now.
It does. Now, the price increases depend on the weight of the packages and the distance of the delivery. Commercial priority mail packages will see a 75-cent hike, and heavy long-distance deliveries could see increases of $6.50. They say that the agency said it relies on postage product and service sales to fund the operations. However, the announced price hike just comes right after the agency stated plans to buy at least 25,000 electric vehicles as it works to replace its aging fleet. The USPS says it will buy the electric vehicles out of its initial order of 50,000 next-generation delivery vehicles from Oshkosh Defense. However, I did look that up as far as the report on, I don't know if I can bring it up here quickly, but they hadn't planned on buying that many electric vehicles in their let's see if I can bring it up here.
Yeah, I'm sure someone on their governing board is driving that decision.
Actually, there was lawsuits filed by four environmental groups and the United Auto Workers seeking to block their plan to buy mostly gas-powered next-generation delivery vehicles, arguing that the agency failed to comply with the environmental regulations when it issued its EIS. The White House and the EPA also asked the USPS to reconsider, please. And I mean, it's like, you know, they changed it. They don't want to face the lawsuits. And here you have the United Auto Workers, because they're all pushing for these electric vehicles that cost so much more money. So let's go ahead and pay more shipping and more postages. That's going to go straight to the small business owner that does any shipping for that compete against Amazon and the online sellers and so forth. They're not going to be able to absorb all of those price increases, and it won't be temporary. They didn't temporarily just increase it for the holidays when they have to go from these, you know, gas-powered vehicles to electric vehicles. It's just, that's who runs businesses in today's world. Lawsuits, government, more subsidies, all on the backs of the taxpayers and small businesses. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CommonSenseTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Give us a call. DGScoins.com is the website. Make sure you go there. Sign up for the weekly newsletter. And I'm losing my voice, Dave.
Uh-oh.
Anyway, I kind of got off on a little bit of a tangent there on the UPS because we do a lot of shipping. And I know what it's like for when it comes down to businesses and so forth and the competition between Amazon and a lot of those places. And people aren't going to be able to do it out there. And especially for the holidays. You know, so people try to buy American here and so forth and whatnot. But, you know, they don't want to buy from Amazon. They don't want to buy from some of these other of the big retailers online and so forth. But, you know, hey, they're being pushed that they don't have a choice. And it's just wrong. It's wrong. It's wrong. And so I didn't know if you wanted to add any more to that, Dave.
Nope.
Okay. But you are going to check on Oshkosh Defense.
Oshkosh Defense in Oshkosh, Wisconsin.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. And let's see what else. Let's go ahead and get into, we have mortgage rates. They're back over 5% for the 30-year loan. Freddie Mac reports that the 30-year rate rose to 5.22 from just a little under 5% just last week. And by contrast, that rate stood 45% lower just a year ago at 2.87%. The 15-year fixed rate mortgages increased to 4.59% from 4.26. So again, last week it was below 5% for the first time in months. And, you know, they're expecting to see some stability returning to the housing market, but I don't think that little of a drop in rates are going to make that much difference. I think you're going to see a bigger drop in housing prices, Dave.
Well, I'm pleased to say my credit union line of credit, equity line of credit, is still has not moved either way from 2.9%. So hallelujah.
Great.
But the National Association of Realtors reported last month that sales of previously occupied U.S. homes, that's not new homes, slowed for the fifth consecutive month in June. And, of course, as Melody alluded, home prices, which have kept climbing this year, although at a slower pace than what we saw after January 1st, resulting in national median home prices jumping to $416,000. That's astounding. These higher borrowing rates are discouraging house hunters, especially younger first-time buyers. And it's cooling this housing market that's been hot for years. And I think quite possibly that coolness is going to turn to frigidity in the not too distant future, Melody.
Well, you do hear stories about, you know, homes that were on the market, went off the market, high value homes on the market quick. Taken off the market quick, but now they're back on. That means people didn't qualify, most likely. Or with the increase, you know, perhaps there was, you know, changes in the appraisals and so forth because the prices went so high. Now the homes really aren't appraising out at that amount. Also, you're hearing that it's taking, and what used to take a day or two for homes to sell, now it's taken 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, for them to get sold with prices, with price reduction. So yeah, it might get a little bit chillier there in that department, as you said. You know, heading into this time of the year, we have back to school, and parents are out there doing their school shopping. And we know we have households living paycheck to paycheck. This year's total back to school spending is really expected to match last year's record high of $37 billion. And now that's according to the National Retail Federation. I'm not sure when they actually put their numbers together as far as what folks are expected to spend. I don't know how they get those numbers. They found that families and children elementary through high school plan to spend an average of $864 on school supplies, $168 more than in 2019. Well, they probably, you know, if kids are going back to school, they probably don't have the same supplies that they did back in 2019, because basically they didn't. So I could see why that number was a little bit more increased, if that really has anything to do with it. I'm just trying to rationalize. Families consider back to school and college items an essential category, and 37% of parents may spend more this year than last year, up to $661 per child. And yet 75% of parents are stressed about paying the tab, according to the LendingTree, a 12% jump from last year. So we'll most likely see credit card numbers jump higher and higher if this is true. Or were these numbers figured in prior to the impact of inflation this year, Dave?
Good question. Very good question.
They never tell us everything.
Yeah, it takes some time to look these things up that we don't always have a chance to do. But almost a third of families in the survey said that back-to-school shopping will strain their budgets, with middle-income households feeling especially hard hit. That's according to Bankrate.com. And a new study by Credit Karma found that 37% of parents say they can't afford back-to-school shopping because of inflation. Nearly half of them said that they're going to take on debt while shopping for their kids, meaning credit cards. So, yeah, a lot of money-saving strategies out there to consider. Well, not to consider, to implement. stay within your means, ladies and gentlemen. I know it's your kids, particularly if they've grown out of last year's clothes. It's got to be more of a challenge. But
I remember, Dave, when we went to school, we got a outfit, maybe
and
two.
One outfit?
We got a couple, you know. But I can remember was it you or my brothers were saying that, you know, all you had to do for guys anyway, all you had to do was change shirts. You'd have two or three different outfits per week, but girls are a little different.
fashion.
I know.
It's a beautiful thing.
Yes.
I know that when I turned 15, my mom said, "You want new school clothes? You better work this summer."
Yes.
And that's how I funded my high school wardrobe.
Yes, that's what we did. Yep, we went to work early. And then it was working for gasoline so we could drive. But we had to help with the gasoline to put in the cars. But, you know, we were talking about energy, and it's just not, you know, we talk about places all around the world, and, you know, and of course, here's more important to our hearts, but people are struggling everywhere. And it's just, you know, these we look to Germany, and again, you know, they put the number of oil we were exporting, that has slowed up. They're trying to reverse it, but the chancellor pledged his government won't leave the citizens freezing or unable to pay their energy bills, but acknowledged Thursday that his country faces considerable challenges. Rising fuel costs, Well, they're going to do everything to help citizens get through the time, the difficult time. He cited numerous measures that the government already adopted to try to ease financial hardships for residents, to try to secure alternative energy supplies. He says, you know, he thinks, but then again, they like that social welfare over there. And, you know, it's just, and he was asked whether he feared that frustration could boil over into violent protests. And he says, I don't believe that there will be unrest in this country. He cited Germany's strong tradition of social welfare. Yeah, you know, hey, but once they can't do it, you bet there would be unrest because they're used to getting everything from the government.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, you mentioned that, you know, we're not alone in this dilemma, debacle, whatever you want to call it. And Germany, I mean, is the largest economy in the Eurozone, also the biggest population. I mean, that's something to think about and why we bring you stories. News stories about other places across the world, but Scholz did acknowledge there. He expects many demands during the coming winter as the country tries to reconcile its energy shortages with.
I have to take off, Dave.
Oh, okay. All right. Take care. With plans to phase out nuclear power and fossil fuel use. The German government has given utility companies a green light to shutter oil and coal power plants as part of efforts to reduce the nation's dependence on Russian natural gas. So they will be reopening at some point, presumably after Labor Day. Scholz said the government's also considering extending the life of its three remaining nuclear power plants beyond the end of the year, which, again, had been scheduled to be phased out primarily over concerns of long-term storage of its spent nuclear waste. Scholz appeared to acknowledge that Germany's past reliance on Russian energy, which has long been criticized by its allies, had been a mistake, and that the country should have diversified its supply sooner. He declined to say whether he personally regretted Germany's continued purchase of Russian gas and whether it gave Berlin a heightened responsibility to support Ukraine in defending itself against Russia's military assault. We will certainly be bringing you more news in this area as more news unfolds throughout the fall. Now, in other international news, Ukraine isn't the only hot spot where there's fighting and killing, going on. The Palestinian death toll from last weekend's fighting between Israel and Gaza militants rose to almost 50 today after an 11-year-old girl and man died from wounds they got during what's being called the worst cross-border violence in over a year. While two other Gaza children, 8 and 14, were fighting for their lives in a Jerusalem hospital. All in all, more than 300 Palestinians were wounded over the weekend when Israel struck Islamic Jihad targets across Gaza, and the militant group fired hundreds of rockets back at Israel. The death of 11-year-old in an Arab neighborhood of Jerusalem brought to 17 the number of children killed in this recent fighting. Israel strikes appear to have killed more than 30 Palestinians, including civilians and several militants, among them two senior Islamic Jihad commanders. Now, a ceasefire did take effect Sunday night, bringing an end to the barrage that started on Friday. Israel and Gaza's militant Hamas rulers have fought four wars and several smaller battles but devastating in terms of death and destruction over the last 15 years at just a staggering cost to that area's 2 million Palestinian residents. In other developments, we learned of a Palestinian prisoner who's on a protracted hunger strike, moved to a hospital out of jail today because of his worsening condition. Not a lot of good stuff going on over there. Beijing's new trade blocks against Taiwan affect about 0.04% of their two-way trade, according to a new study, essentially making Beijing's action more political than economic. That included suspensions of imports of Taiwanese citrus, frozen fish, sweets, and biscuits, and exports of natural sands from China, the mainland, to Taiwan. Beijing took action against Taiwan following House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's visit there earlier this month, despite warnings and protestations from Beijing. China says Taiwan has no right to conduct foreign relations on its own and warned for weeks against Pelosi's visits, although dozens of members of Congress visit there routinely. It just could be because she's more outspoken and second in the line of presidential succession after the vice president. Interestingly, Taiwan's exports to mainland China were worth about $113 billion last year, and its imports from China amounted to about $82 billion. All right, back here in January, and I'm not sure we're going to have enough time for this article. January 2020, Glenn Youngkin, who's now the governor of Virginia, got some welcome news. An $8.5 million severance, essentially, of Carlyle stock. That's the company, the private equity company he had worked for and led as co-chief executive. Importantly, he received this stock tax-free. And as I thought, we are out of time for this segment. We'll come back, tell you a little bit more about this evolving news after this break. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CommonSenseTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Melody taking care of other client business this last segment. You can reach her at 1-800-375-4188 for all your precious metal needs. Right before the break, we were talking about Governor of Virginia Glenn Youngkin, who got a tax-free $8.5 million bonus, I guess you'll call it. That came on top of $54 million in compensation Youngkin had received from Carlisle during the previous 2 years. He retired from Carlisle September 30th in 2020. And won the governor's election the following November. Now, he wasn't alone in receiving the 2020 windfall. According to court documents, 8 other Carlisle officials received over $200 million worth of company shares in the deal, tax-free, paid for by the company. David Rubenstein, Carlisle's billionaire founder and the other co-chair, received $70.5 million worth. Now that transaction's under attack by a Carlisle shareholder in Delaware Chancery Court. Carlisle's Incorporated. The suit filed last week by the City of Pittsburgh Comprehensive Municipal Pension Trust Fund says the $344 million deal harmed Carlisle stockholders who received nothing in return when they funded the payday. Meanwhile, the Carlisle insiders who received the payouts escaped a tax bill that would have exceeded $1 billion, according to the complaint. Accuses Rubenstein, Youngkin, and other Carlisle officials of lining their own pockets at the expense of people like police officers and firefighters. Carlisle payout exemplifies the private equity industry's laser focus on avoiding tax bills. Private equity investors already receive special tax treatment on their earnings under what is known as the carried interest loophole. Much of their income is taxed at 20%, far below the 37% maximum paid by other high-earning salaried workers. Carlisle's 2020 $344 million tax-free payout to these insiders is a new twist on a type of contract known as a tax receivable agreement, or TRA for short. Companies and their founders typically create such agreements in conjunction with initial public offerings of their company shares. Under normal circumstances, TRA payouts can be a win-win for both a company and its insiders. That's because both parties get something of value. The insiders get stock, and the company gets a tax benefit when they sell it. But in a highly unusual move that was unfair to Carlisle's shareholders, lawyers for the Pittsburgh Pension Fund say Carlisle structured its payout as tax-free, generating no tax benefits, even as it enriched insiders. So we'll be following this lawsuit, see where it takes us. Now, back to inflation. After months of scorching inflation, things are finally looking a little more moderate, or should I just say less extreme. Big part of it is simply falling gas prices. But if you look a little closer at July's CPI report, there are more hints that the worst may be behind us. at least in terms of continuing price hikes. As we told you earlier in the program, overall prices were flat last month. Actually, if you prefer not to round, they were down. They were down 0.02%. Now, 1 or 2 months certainly do not make a trend. But if data like this keep up, it could mean the Fed might not be able to drive the economy into the into the ground to get inflation to more acceptable levels. Over the last year, again, headline prices up 8.5%. Core inflation, excluding energy and food prices, up 5.9%, still way ahead of the comfort level of everyday Americans, not to mention the Fed. The July numbers do represent a downshift from the soaring inflation of May and June, which prompted more hawkish moves. Inflation was pulled down principally by 7.7% in gasoline prices, which have continued to fall so far this month. Other sources of relief included airfare down 7.8% in July and rental car prices down 9.5%. Now, the relatively benign July CPI numbers align with other recent data that suggest inflation could be starting to turn. Looking at falling prices for a wide range of commodities and the New York Fed survey of American expectations for future inflation, plunging last month to 3.2% 3 years out and in the 2% point range in 5 years. But look, make no mistake, this relief is mild, almost negligible compared to the run-up in prices over the last year. The last 3 months, headline inflation has been an annualized 9.5%, core inflation close to 7%. Fed officials have spoken of the importance of seeing actual inflation come down in a longer-term way before declaring victory. 1, 2, or even 3 decent months is nowhere close to achieving that. I mean, grocery prices rose another 1.3% in July alone, creating a continued rising strain on household budgets. They're up 11% over the last year. We have economist Jim Knightley at ING who said core inflation remains on an upward trajectory due to rising housing rental costs and service sector inflation pressures. Bottom line, okay, 1 month of relief beats the alternative, but we're a long way from being able to declare that the inflation crisis is over. Now, a major reason that the economy has seemed so miserable for so many Americans this year is that wages have been rising more slowly than prices. Well, for 1 month at least, that appears to have changed. Flat inflation last month means the 0.5% gain in average hourly earnings actually represents a rise in real inflation-adjusted wages. Real wages rose even if you put energy prices aside, given that 0.3% core number. But over the last year, the average American worker is still underwater, with a 3% decline in hourly earnings in inflation-adjusted terms. What analysts like Axios's Neil Irwin are saying we should be rooting for on wages is a delicate question right now. On the one hand, he says workers' purchasing power has been declining and people want to see that reverse. On the other, if wages start rising a lot faster relative to prices, it's going to result in fears of a wage price spiral that fuels yet more inflation. Higher nominal wage gains will make the Fed even more concerned about the inflation outlook and therefore more inclined to raise rates so high that a recession becomes inevitable. It might be anyway already. Thus, we should be rooting for real wage gains to become more routine. But because inflation is coming down, not because nominal wage gains are going up. All right. You know, it's interesting. It's another inflation story. This one coming somewhat ironically is the U.S. House is getting ready to debate and vote on the Inflation Reduction Act, which contains major funding, among other things, to incentivize the manufacture and purchase of more electric vehicles. The prices of these so-called EVs were supposed to be heading in reverse right now. Instead, they're taking off. Makers and independent experts had for years projected steady declines in EV prices as battery costs stabilized, making the environmentally friendly technology a more affordable replacement for the traditional gas engine car. But Ford announced the other day that it's raising its price of its F-150 Lightning electric pickup by between $6,000 and $8,500. To a starting price of $47,000 on the low end to $97,000 on the upper end. Their announcement follows the recent EV price increases by several other brands, including Tesla, Rivian, Lucid, and GMC. Edmunds analyst Ivan Drury says, "We all wish there were more affordable EVs in the marketplace today, but there are none." The average transaction price of an EV in July was roughly $63,000, up about 15% from a year ago, according to Edmunds. That compares to an average of roughly $47,000 for all vehicles in July. EV raw material costs are more than double the average of internal combustion engine costs, $8,200 versus roughly $3,600. Per vehicle. But Drury says the popularity of certain models has also contributed to price increases. So for the electric vehicles to spread to the masses, prices will definitely need to come down. And there's no indication that's going to happen any time soon. Now, last today, look at the politics of inflation. Now, it's inevitable that President Biden and congressional Dems will be going on the offense this fall. Specifically, their offensive will be against the Republican drumbeat about rising prices. You're going to argue the GOP is repeatedly sided with special interests, pushing an extreme agenda that costs families. And it's no surprise that the GOP in turn plans to make November's midterm elections a gas and groceries election, all about inflation. And Biden can't undo the pain that families have felt as everyday prices have skyrocketed. So, according to Axios' Mike Allen, this is his inflation jujitsu, using Republicans' force against them. The president is expected to sign the Democrats' climate and health tax bill, the Inflation Reduction Act, soon after the House passes it, expected tomorrow or Saturday. Biden and his vice president, Kamala Harris, and his cabinet will then fan out across the country with the message. A newly leaked White House memo says the bill puts Democrats in a position of strength heading into Labor Day. The memo from White House Communications Director Kate Bedingfield and senior advisor Anita Dunn argues that Biden's wins have dealt blows to a parade of entrenched interests. Or some of the interests are winners as well, as there always are. Among the targets, pharmaceutical industry, big corporations, the gun lobby, oil and gas companies. Memo concludes, this is the choice before the American people. President Biden and congressional Democrats are taking on special interests for you and your family. Sounds like a good election year talk. Now, versus congressional Republicans' agenda that serves the wealthiest corporations and themselves. Special interest messaging attempts to counter the narrative that Democrats are becoming or have become the party of the economic elite. Well, far too many of them, members of both parties, in fact, take far too much corporate money, campaign contributions from Wall Street and Wall Street interests. In any event, it's a message that Democrats are running in swing states, especially including in Pennsylvania, where I live, Ohio, and North Carolina, in an effort to win back rural and working class votes that the Dems lost in 2020. Both parties are now fighting for the working class mantle in part. Well, how about that? Another day, another argument. Good to be with you again today. That's all the time we have for this program. I'll be back next Tuesday. Melody back tomorrow with Butch. Also be on the lookout of our What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog in your email inboxes in the AM. Thanks, as always, to our engineer, Todd, and to you, ladies and gentlemen, for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Bye-bye.